Okay, let's step inside. Picture this scene. You're surrounded by just immense quiet, but it's the heavy quiet of extreme wealth. We're talking vast marble floors, ceilings so high you can barely see them, these enormous chandeliers hanging down, opulence, really. But cutting through that quiet, there's this one sound, a repetitive, almost grating noise. It's the scrape and sometimes a squeak of a wheelchair moving across all that polished stone. And that sound, you know, the sound of that chair, it wasn't just background noise. It felt like the ticking clock of a calculation, a really high stakes bet being made by this young woman, his wife.
Yeah.
She seemed absolutely convinced she'd locked in her future the minute she said, "I do." She looked around at all that grandeur and she saw it as hers. Well, almost hers, pending just one event. Her entire life plan, it seems, hinged on her husband dying soon.
And that conviction, that absolute certainty, that's really our jumping off point for this deep dive. We need to push past that glittering surface, the public perception, and really analyze this story. It's about a pretty unforgiving waiting game, isn't it?
Yeah.
About greed, sure, but also about deception. Deception woven into someone's daily existence.
So what's our mission here, then?
Our mission, really, is to unpack the sources we have detailing this figure, the husband who wouldn't die. We need to sort of contrast the folklore that inevitably sprang up around him with the documented facts of his sheer persistence. This goes way beyond just inheritance law. It's looking at what happens when a very careful plan is built entirely on a false assumption, the assumption of imminent death.
You get this really stark contrast right from the start, don't you? On one hand, this unbelievable mansion, this symbol of the jackpot she thought she'd won. And on the other, the focus of all her waiting. The husband, he's already in his 70s, always, always in that wheelchair. The sources mention these dinners, lavish, but silent. And the loudest thing in the room, that chair again. Scraping, squeaking, like a metronome counting down the seconds. Except the seconds weren't passing nearly fast enough for her. She's looking at the marble, the velvet, this huge vault of gold she believes is just waiting for her signature.
And from her point of view, you can almost see why she felt so certain. The setup seemed perfect, didn't it? Marrying to staggering wealth, and every single public indicator suggested the main asset, the husband, was, well, rapidly depreciating. He projected this image of being incredibly fragile.
And how fragile are we talking?
The sources use this exact phrase. He looked one step from the grave. So for her, the conclusion was obvious. Everything he had, all of it, would soon be hers. No question. The whole narrative engine is her absolute certainty based entirely on this visible, performed frailty, his supposed impending death.
Okay, let's dig into that public image, the surface record, because it sounds like it was incredibly well maintained, so well, in fact, that it basically confirmed her own beliefs and kind of shut down any outside doubts. The details we have about how he acted paint a really specific picture.
Oh, absolutely. It was consistent.
Always frail, right? Spoke very softly, moved like someone just completely exhausted, like his energy was almost gone. And this physical state, this projection of near collapse, that was all the proof she needed for her timeline.
Exactly. And the performance held up everywhere. We have these great sensory details from people who saw him regularly. Think about dinner, the daily ritual. Here's a man with immense wealth at this huge, probably custom-made table. But the sources keep mentioning he barely touched his food.
Really? Amidst all that luxury?
Yes. He'd just sit there, leaving behind these empty plates. Not empty because he finished, you understand? But empty because he apparently lacked the strength or maybe the appetite to eat. Those plates became this sort of visual shorthand for his fading life force. Signaled finality, you know?
Wow. Okay. And it wasn't just at home.
No, it extended outwards. When they had parties, you know, on the social stage, he kept up this calculated vulnerability. He barely spoke above a whisper. Now, that's interesting. It's not just being quiet. It's strategic, isn't it?
How so?
Well, a man who whispers at a big party forces everyone to lean in, right? To get closer, treat him very carefully. It reinforces that image. Here's this fading light, too weak, too precious to even project his voice. It makes people behave in a certain way around him, which just cements that public idea of him being an invalid.
And the wife, she just soaked all this up, factored it into her waiting game.
Completely. The sources really emphasize this. She'd walk those massive marble halls each day, not just admiring the place, but actively imagining her future without him. She's doing the mental math, calculating the return on her investment, counting chandeliers, probably pacing out rooms, convinced the end was near.
Did people know what she was doing?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't exactly subtle. People openly whispered, "She's just waiting for his fortune." But here's the thing. In that specific context, huge wealth, visibly frail old man, the gold digger label didn't quite stick as a major scandal. It was almost seen as, well, an understandable if cynical strategy.
So she looked at him 70s, frail, not eating, whispering, needing a chair, and thought, why wait for some smaller payout down the line when this massive fortune is right here, practically guaranteed, and about to drop any day now?
And that brings us right to this analytical point. Her pursuit of the vault of gold, her perfect plan, it shows she fundamentally misunderstood the system she thought she was gaming. She saw an exploit. Marry old money. Wait for nature to take its course. Collect. Like it was written in the rules of rich people dying.
Like she found a cheat code.
Sort of. And we can actually link this to our index. Remember the Monopoly case we looked at? The idea that from Monopoly, the game trains you before it pays you. She was trained by the visible system inheritance. Waiting for death pays off. But she totally missed the rules of the actual game being played by her husband, which, as we'll see, wasn't about dying. It was about endurance, about performance.
So she calculated everything based on what she could see, the age, the frailty, that constant chair squeak. But she missed the most important variable.
Exactly, the endurance. And maybe, just maybe, the deliberate deception of the man she was betting against. And that miscalculation wasn't just about reading the present wrong. It seems to stem from, well, ignoring some pretty crucial history. That surface record, the frail man in the chair. It was only part of the story, small part, maybe. Our sources really stress this unspoken history, something the wife either didn't know or maybe just chose to overlook.
Which was?
This wasn't his first marriage, not by a long shot. The fact that there were two wives before her completely changes how we have to interpret his current situation, his supposed frailty.
Okay, wait. Two previous wives. This is where it shifts, isn't it? From just being about money to something.
Oh.
A lot more unsettling.
Definitely. When you look at his marital history, this pattern emerges. A pattern of, you could say, deletion?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe just outlasting. The record is stark. Two wives had come before her, both young, both beautiful, both gone.
Both young and beautiful.
And gone. Gone. So the husband's persistence, his survival across multiple relationships with younger partners, it stops looking like just bad luck or coincidence. It starts to look like a repeatable outcome.
So his frailty takes on a whole new meaning now.
It has to. His public persona screamed vulnerability,
sure. Right?
But his actual track record, the hard data of his marriages, suggested something closer to, well, invulnerability, at least in terms of lifespan relative to his partners. He just kept going.
Well, they didn't.
Exactly. This pattern, the younger, supposedly healthier person departs, while the older, seemingly weaker one remains, just statically present, that became the seed for all the local folklore.
And this pattern was so obvious that people around him, the neighbors, they stopped thinking about doctors and started thinking about something else entirely.
Pretty much. They started making jokes, or maybe they weren't entirely jokes, that he had made a deal with death. His sheer endurance in the face of these repeated tragedies fueled that legend. It shifted the whole narrative from inheritance law into the realm of myth.
It's amazing how quickly fact can curdle into folklore when something doesn't add up, isn't it?
It really is. His long life needed some explanation, and since conventional ones didn't seem to fit, given the wives' departures, a supernatural one took root. The fact that the young wives vanished and the old man just kept on, it cemented this idea that maybe the normal rules didn't apply to him.
This whole pattern, you know, younger lives moving on while he stays sort of frozen in time, defying his own apparent condition. It feels familiar. It connects to things we've discussed before about records getting stuck while life keeps happening.
Absolutely. His public record, his medical presentation suggested he was near the end, frozen in frailty. But his actual life kept moving, persisting right past his partners, actively contradicting his documented state. We saw something similar in the Real Wendy files, remember? As in Real Wendy, records can freeze while lives keep moving. The paperwork suggested one thing, imminent decline, but the reality of his existence just kept contradicting that prediction. He endured past the very people who were banking on that prediction.
So the really important data wasn't his blood pressure or his age. It was those two previous wives, those empty spaces in his marital history.
That was the crucial pattern. The wife was betting on the snapshot. The current medical state. She didn't realize, or didn't want to realize, that she was stepping into a cycle that had already played out twice before, always with the same result. The young woman leaves, the old man stays.
Okay, so this gap between the official story and the lived reality, it gets even wider when we look at these witness accounts, these midnight sightings. This is where that folklore really starts bumping up against the image of the wheelchair-bound invalid.
Right. These accounts are crucial because they introduce a direct contradiction.
And they were pretty specific, weren't they? People living nearby swore they saw him at night. Doing what?
Standing tall.
Mm-hmm.
Without the wheelchair. Moving, and this is the phrase used, like a man reborn.
Wow. Okay, so picture that. The guy who barely whispers at dinner, who needs help just to get across a room, suddenly he's seen strolling around his grounds in the dead of night, looking perfectly healthy. The contrast is just jarring.
It forces a serious rethink, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We have this stark juxtaposition. Public record. Frail man needs the chair. Folklore, fueled by sightings. Strong man walks freely when unseen. Which raises the unavoidable question, was the wheelchair the truth? Or was it an incredibly successful performance? A front.
But why? If it was a performance, why keep it up for so long? Years, apparently. What's the end game in pretending to be that debilitated? Surely just being a private person would be easier than faking needing a wheelchair 24/7.
That's a good question. Maintaining that level of illusion suggests the payoff had to be more than just privacy. Think about it. The wheelchair wasn't just a symbol of frailty. It created the very situation his wife was banking on. It gave her the ultimate incentive to stay, to wait.
Because the payout seems so close.
Exactly. By appearing weak, terminal even, he controlled her timeline. She couldn't really leave, could she? The prize was too big, and he looked too close to the edge. So the act, the charade, it trapped her. Trapped her in waiting mode. The fact he was apparently seen walking means the daytime frailty was likely a choice, a long-term strategy to hide his real condition, maybe his real strength.
That level of concealment, that long-term manipulation, it almost makes that deal with death rumor sound less crazy, doesn't it? Even if you're skeptical.
Well, this is where we need that careful hedge. The neighbor's jokes about some supernatural contract. That stays firmly in the realm of folklore. We're not confirming any deals with death here. However, the undeniable fact of his endurance, this pattern of outlasting people, coupled with these sightings of unexplained nighttime mobility, it served as the circumstantial evidence backing up the legend.
So the legend fed off the reality, in a way.
Precisely. His endurance itself felt unnatural to people. It became the unsettling proof supporting the myth of the unstoppable man, whether that was due to a pact or just sheer hidden resilience.
And the fact that nobody officially saw him walking, that just reinforces the idea of deception.
I think so. The best evidence for the deception might be how well it worked. The sources say he was seen standing, moving freely at night. But the public record? Crickets. Nothing. The fact that he wasn't supposed to be seen walking around validates the idea that his true state was a secret, a deliberate delusion from his public story of frailty. His ability to just erase his real strength from view confirms the performance.
It reminds me of that Klaus Richter situation we examined, where the gaps, the things deliberately hidden, told us more than the official story.
Exactly. Like Klaus Richter, erasure becomes the evidence. The very absence of him being seen walking during the day confirms how deliberate the wheelchair act must have been. It wasn't just frailty, it was calculated vulnerability.
So the wife, the neighbors, everyone thought they were waiting for this trapped, dying man to finally give up.
But maybe, just maybe, they were the ones trapped. Trapped by the image of helplessness he projected. An image that worked as a shield for him, a lure for her, and ultimately a cage for her patience. So what happens next is just this brutal waiting game stretching out. The sources describe the passage of time, how the wife's precise calculation, you know, the one based on a quick end, just didn't pan out. Years started to slip by.
And every single day.
Every day, the sound of the wheelchair, the sight of the husband, still there. Frail, yes, the sources grant that much, but relentlessly, stubbornly alive. Her entire future, the one she'd banked everything on, just remained suspended, held completely hostage by the simple, steady breathing of the man she married, expecting him to die.
You have to imagine the psychological pressure cooker that must have been. Her whole life is on pause, waiting for this one event that just wouldn't happen. She couldn't leave, right? The money was too immense, and he always looked just about to go.
Right. A state of perpetual limbo.
But she couldn't move forward either, just stuck walking those marble halls day after day. Her whole identity basically future wealthy widow, a title that kept getting deferred. That calculated patience must have soured into something really agonizing.
And this long period of waiting, this buildup of tension, it sets the stage perfectly for the final twist. The great inversion, you could call it.
Oh.
One morning, the silence they were all waiting for finally falls over the mansion.
Ah, so he finally...
No, that's the cruel part. The sources are very clear. The silence arrived, not because of him. The husband, the target of her entire life plan, wasn't the one who stopped breathing.
Wait, She died.
The planner was removed from the scene. The whole premise of her gamble that youth and strategy triumph over age and frailty was just fundamentally wrong. Mortality didn't play by her rules.
Wow. The symmetry there is just brutal. She spent years measuring his life, his closeness to the grave, calculating her win based on that distance. And then suddenly she's the one measured out.
Her expected role, the wealthy widow presiding over his estate, it never happened. Instead, she became the name carved in stone. The entire situation flipped. The waiter became waited upon permanently.
Which brings us to that final image, doesn't it? The graveside.
The graveside scene really resolves the whole endurance contest. There stands the husband, the artifact of survival, you might say, standing at the edge of her fresh grave. And the sources describe him so simply, breathing, unshaken.
Unshaken after everything.
He just outlived her. The third young wife who had defined his values solely by how close he seemed to death. His life itself, his sheer persistence, becomes the ultimate tangible symbol of the entire story. It defines the limits of her calculated greed.
The very thing she saw as just an obstacle, his enduring life, turned out to be the only constant, the only unshakable fact in the whole narrative. It outlasted her youth, her plans, her certainty.
And that persistence, the living object defying all expectations, that gives us our final thematic connection. The husband remains. He endures. He's the thing that lasts. It echoes some things we've tracked before about artifacts or ideas outliving their creators. Specifically, the Buzz Lightyear case comes to mind.
How so?
Remember how we talked about the created object or the loyalty outliving the person or the original purpose? Echoing Buzz Lightyear, artifacts outlive their makers. Here, the husband's life itself, which the wife treated like a decaying asset, something temporary, became the enduring artifact. It survived the very person who tried to profit from its expected end.
He wasn't the victim in her plan. He was just the constant. The unmoving fact around which her plans crumbled, watching the plotter vanish while he just kept breathing.
So, if we pull back and look at the big picture, what have we really learned from these sources? I think the story of the husband who wouldn't die serves as this really potent, maybe uncomfortable lesson about misreading situations, about miscalculating risk.
Yeah, the core themes seem pretty clear, right? Appearances can be incredibly deceptive, obviously. Greed, when it's your only strategy, especially long-term. Well, it failed spectacularly here. And maybe the biggest theme is just the sheer power of endurance. Simple persistence winning out over complex calculation.
Exactly. The wife focused entirely on the surface stuff. The fancy chandeliers, how weak he looked, the soft voice, probably what the doctor said, all the visible signs pointing towards a quick ending.
But she completely missed the real data.
She missed the pattern, the history established by the two wives who came before her. That hidden history was the only thing that actually predicted how this was likely to end. She ignored the crucial data set.
It's fascinating, too, how she thought she was playing the system, finding this loophole in inheritance, but she was actually trapped inside a system he might have controlled all along.
That's a really sharp point. He'd already shown he could outlast partners. That apparent weakness might have been his greatest strategic tool. It let him dictate the pace, control her expectations, keep her exactly where he wanted her.
So the man everyone saw as just this frail figure waiting to die, maybe one step from the grave, he was actually the most resilient player on the board, maybe even the most strategically dangerous one.
Quite possibly.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? What assumptions are you making about the things you're waiting for, the goals you're pursuing? Are you just looking at the surface, the easy-to-see signs? Or are you digging deeper, looking for the underlying patterns, the hidden history, the true cost of endurance?
He stood at her grave, breathing, unshaken.